Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Get a few fans here, a few folks who watched the game last night, the Rockets game, and then watched the post game weighing in. I had not seen this. Steve Kerr, someone said, crying like a little bee about the loose ball foul. We'll have that audio for you a little later this hour. I just watched it during the break. It is very fun to watch Steve Kerr
be so
distraught over this billion-dollar industry that's being ruined by these referees.
We're the Warriors. Yeah. What the heck? You're supposed to ignore moving screens and everything else and just go,
Yeah, not going to lie. It's very enjoyable to watch Steve Kerr complain about anything. So so we'll have that for you a little later on this hour. As we welcome you back in, 7 o'clock hour. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you, 713-572-4610. The other big headline today, we'll touch on, we hit it pretty hard in the 6 o'clock hour. If you missed it, Bill Belichick reached a 5-year deal. It's official now to coach the North Carolina Tar Heels. So we'll talk about that later in the show as well. We mentioned the Astros in headlines, winter meetings ongoing up in Dallas, and the Astros have sort of taken the title from all the experts that I've seen, Seth, out there talking about the winter meetings on MLB TV and so forth. The Astros have taken a title that the reasons why they are getting this title, I don't know that I like, but they have taken on the mantle of the most intriguing team at the winter meetings right now, because Bregman has worked his way to at or near the top of the available free agents, with Juan Soto gone and Max Fried gone, the Yankees still having a ton of money to spend, other teams that are very needy of an Alex Bregman. Bregman is a big story, and Kyle Tucker has turned into maybe the biggest story at the winter meetings. The availability of Kyle Tucker, the rumored pursuit by the Cubs and the Yankees of Kyle Tucker. Here was Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros beat for MLB.com. Tags does a great job. He was on MLB TV yesterday, and he, yet another Astros insider, weighing in on the likelihood of the Astros moving on and trading Kyle Tucker.
I think there's a very real chance he would not be back after next year, and we've seen the Astros lose free agent after free agent, Correa, Springer, Garrett Cole, and they continue to win, but at some point there's a gap now. They don't have the prospects like they used to, so now they have to make a trade and fill some of these holes. But yes, it certainly seems like there's momentum towards a Tucker trade. There's, you know, the Yankees make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. That would be a consolation prize maybe for Juan Soto, but do the Yankees want to go down that road again of a guy that they don't have under contract for next year and then try to resign him for big money? So, but the Astros could get a couple of impact players, maybe a prospect or two, save a lot of money, and Astros fans would probably scream, but this makes a lot of sense to trade Kyle Tucker at this point.
Yeah, I'm starting to really come onto that side of the camp. Like, I'm on the side now, Seth, of like, what breaking news tweet is going to excite me? You know, I'm very anxious to. I'm anxious for a Kyle Tucker trade because I do think it's the best thing for the Astros right now.
I do think this is what I sense. Just in the way I could see it going is that we're hearing more and more from Astros fans about, hey, yeah, let's remember Kyle Tucker hasn't done much in the playoffs.
They do bring that up.
Couple of years. Yeah. Like it's coming up more and more, and I think that the transition into, you know, in our minds, if Kyle Tucker goes within 2 months, it'll be that he was the worst player ever in the playoffs, and it's good riddance to bad rubbish, as Grandma Ev might say. The Cubs, there was a lot of chatter about the Cubs yesterday.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because Seth Payne was the first one to bring it up here locally. I saw your face when I brought up the Cubs yesterday morning. You thought I was saying the wrong team name. But I had read the beat reporters up in Chicago from the day before, who were kind of talking about either the speculation or maybe some of it's based on what they're hearing. But that there are, it could make sense. And that it could be more player for player than prospects for players, and that's more appealing to me. I can stomach that better because that feels more like a way to prop the window open a little bit, or at least make the rebuild a little less painful than the first time around.
Yeah, it would be a deal where you feel like, okay, we can still win this division at least. You know, they are similar to the Texans. The Astros' chances of just getting into the dance are buoyed by the fact that they play in a ratchet division right now. You know, it's not a good, they won it by winning 88 games last year, you know, so it's not a good division. Chandler Rome and Ken Rosenthal, both of The Athletic, had some specificity about this, and the trade they're talking about with the Cubs for Kyle Tucker is sort of a combo platter of what you're talking about, Seth. It's a combination of major league players that would become immediate contributors to the Astros. Now, would they be contributors on the level of Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman? Probably not. But would they be contributors that would keep you competitive, plus you get the bonus of a couple prospects? Yes. This is what they're reporting, that Seiya Suzuki, outfielder, and Cubs corner infielder Isak Paredes, who was a Tampa Bay Ray last year, and the Astros tried to get him at the trade deadline, so they like this player, are two players the Astros are targeting in a possible trade for Kyle Tucker with the Cubs. Talks are fluid, and the teams have exchanged a variety of names. Any Cubs package for Tucker likely would include prospects as well. Third baseman Cam Smith, who's the Cubs' first-round pick in the most recent draft, is another player in whom the Astros are interested. So this gives you a couple guys that would be part of your everyday lineup. You know, Paredes can play third or first base, so this sort of allows you to play the middle while you're waiting for Alex Bregman to make a decision here. He'll be in the lineup one way or the other. Bregman leaves, he's probably your third baseman, and you go after a first baseman. If Bregman stays, he's your everyday first baseman. So the flexibility of that trade, Paredes' bat is, you know, all the analytics you saw about it, there's a reason they wanted him so badly, because the way he hits, the side of the plate he hits from, he's tailor-made. They feel like he's tailor-made for Daikin Park. The Cam Smith thing is interesting because now you start to get into, okay, this is the Dana Brown scouting eye that we've heard so much about. Like, who are the prospects that come back, and what was Dana Brown, who will remind people, Dana Brown, a huge reason why the Braves have had such a good young nucleus for their team that won a world championship a few years ago.
The Cubs people I read had basically said that Cam Smith might be, they're very hesitant to let go of Cam Smith.
Yeah.
Maybe he's untouchable, but hey, Kyle Tucker was untouchable.
Yeah,
and now he's not. All right. Four or five years ago, we were saying like, can't move Kyle Tucker. Right. And we're like, oh, whatever. All right. And now he's tradable. He's touchable.
Yeah. Yep. He is. Now, I'm interested too. Well, here's one more from Brian McTaggart, kind of alludes to how Astros fans are going to feel if there's no Tucker, and he brings up Bregman's name as well.
Does it make sense to trade Kyle Tucker and then bring back Alex Bregman? That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't think Bregman will be back either, and that's going to be tough for Astros fans to digest if they lose both of those players, cornerstone players, but they're just at the point to where they already have a very high payroll. They have so many needs now. They have corner infield needs, starting pitching, relief pitching. They can get a lot of things that address a lot of their needs. Are they going to take a big step back? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they can build around their pitching staff and still be really competitive.
If Alex Bregman leaves, does Jose Altuve unfollow the Astros on his social media accounts?
Does he go from Jose Altuve, Astro second baseman, to Jose Altuve, human being? Yeah.
Just an egg profile and everything else. He just distances himself from the franchise.
I'll tell you what, of all the unfollowings of teams, not just in Houston, but around sports, that one would be near the top of the holy bleep factor right there.
I would say it would be an uncomfortable conversation, or an interesting conversation. I don't know if it would be uncomfortable or not, but basically Jim Crane has to explain to Altuve, listen, Jose, we had room for one sentimental value contract, and you've got it.
Yes.
You know, like it's,
yes.
Hey, we've got you signed through the age of 37, 36, whatever.
Yeah, like no, he's 34 right now. He's going to 39,
like,
man. Yeah,
and it's team friendly. You know, it's front loaded, but you are our sentimental contract.
That's
right,
exactly
now.
Right, Seth.
We only have room for so much sentimentality. I'm in the logistics biz. You see,
yeah.
We got to get the package there on time at some point.
Yes, yeah. Everybody's assuming Bregman's gone. We've not heard anything from Bregman, and really not heard a whole lot from Boris as well, Scott Boris, Bregman's agent.
Are people assuming he's gone?
I think Brian McTaggart, you know, kind of in that cut right there, just said a lot of people, I think if we were to poll Astro fans, are you guys assuming, do you think Bregman's staying? I think 80 to 90% would say, I think he's leaving right now. Yeah, I think it's weighted pretty heavily towards him leaving, especially
I would put it at 70% chance of him leaving, but 30% is still a pretty healthy chunk of hope in my mind.
Because I don't know, man. When money's involved and the Yankees are involved and teams like that, I feel like they've got a lot of control over that percentage right now. The Astros are dug in. This is where they're stopped at 6 years. 156.
I feel like the Yankees too, in like a desperate lunging for some kind of you know acceptance or at least excitement from the fan base, they might do it just knowing that their fans will think they just picked pulled off the biggest coup of the century, and they're really sticking it to the Astros now.
Dude, what if they wound up? Okay, let's. Okay, I'm gonna back up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pose this rhetorical question. Well, that's not rhetorical. I want to ask you this, but I want to play this cut first because we've been talking about Tucker to the Cubs. Joel Sherman covers the Yankees for the New York Post, and he talked about the Yankees' pursuit of Kyle Tucker.
Look, I think there's a little fallout from the Soto situation in a few different ways. One of them is once he gets 765, I think the Astros kind of knew they couldn't sign Tucker anyway. You know, Jim Crane has really held the line at about six-year contracts and not going to the very top of the market. And I think it's pretty clear now Kyle Tucker is going to get probably no less than $300 million as a free agent next year. No one would be surprised if it starts with a four, and you know what happens with the frenzy once teams start negotiating. So I think they know they're not going to have him beyond this season. And by the way, they got a three-month look last year when he had a shin injury of what it looked like without him. By the way, they had the best record in the American League during those 3 months. So they know there's another way to go. They're trying to maximize this. They're thinking first base, third base, and pitching. Feeling you get when you talk to folks is that Tucker is very likely to move when we don't know. The Cubs are a very dynamic player here. They might be the leader, but the Yankees are certainly interested.
Okay, the whole Tucker, you know, they caught fire with Tucker out. They were the best team in the American League. That's all well and good. That was also when Alex Bregman was on the team and catching fire. Bregman had started to get out of his annual slump at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, you could parlay your way into thinking like, hey, they were fine for these. Look at this sample size of when they didn't have Yordan or Tucker or Bregman, and they were fine.
No, dude.
The outfield
was Dubon, Chaz, and whatever they were running out at right field at the time. They were signing guys off the street to play right field in August. That's not a desirable thing. This is what I was going to ask you, and that's why I wanted to play the audio of Tucker being in the mix for the Yankees. That's a thing.
Yeah.
How is it going to feel? I hate doing this at 7:15 in the morning. There's people in their cars. How is it going to feel if, and this could happen, if Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker both wind up on the Yankees?
I think that's where sentiment would change a lot compared to when various other free agents have left. There's very little ill will towards Carlos Correa, other than like the whole thing was longer and more dramatic than it probably needed to be. But George Springer, even Garrett Cole, who went to the Yankees, I mean, that was more based on the way he left after the final game of the World Series,
yes,
more so than anything else.
There's explanations for all of those.
Yeah, I don't think people really... we like to make fun of Garrett Cole's, you know, Kermit voice and everything.
Sure, yeah.
But he's largely defended the Astros when it comes to the being better than everybody else scandal.
Yep.
I think both of those guys, both Bregman and Tucker, going to the Yankees, and I know it would be a trade for Tucker, but still, I think people would then feel like, oh, USOBs. Okay, this is how it's going to be, huh?
I hope so.
All right.
I hope so.
All right, here we go.
I'm here for that, yes.
Yeah.
That's and that's where you just wish, like, it was the version. Like, okay, so now you got to go fight the fight at some point against these guys on the field. And that's where I'm like, oh, I just wish they were leaving the 2019 version of the Astros,
the whole thing about Tucker is he's not going to get a Juan Soto-like deal. But, I mean, I don't think the Yankees make another trade like that for a guy on an expiring contract without committing in their minds to, hey, whatever it takes, we're retaining him next year.
Yeah, dude, I am amazed how many people that cover baseball nationally that are bringing up the Soto trade and how the Yankees got jilted and they only got, they thought they had him for more than a year and he goes to the Mets and that they'd be real scared to make a Tucker trade. Like, very few, if any of them, are bringing up the possibility of the Yankees and Kyle Tucker or whoever Kyle Tucker gets traded to. But in this case, the Yankees signing him to an extension, like negotiating an extension with him. Like, no, that's, they can do that. That's a possibility. And I almost feel like for the Astros, if they're trading Tucker, they're going to be looking for a return on that trade that is at a level where Tucker is almost going to have to be committed beyond this season to whoever they're trading him to, you know, because he's devalued by only being on a 1 year deal, albeit a cheap 1 year deal. I mean, it'd only be 15, 20 million bucks, but he's devalued because of the lack of a long-term commitment. Right now,
then the other dynamic in all of this is just interesting is the Astros were the third highest payroll in baseball last year. Mm-hmm. It's not like Jim Crane is afraid to spend money. There's just limits when you start getting up beyond the CBT, where it's they're different universes. There's just he can't spend that kind of money that the Yankees and the Mets can get away with.
The Yankees, Mets, and Dodgers are operating in a different universe than everybody right now. Well, and this is the first time, Seth, that he's had a lot of bad money on the books. You're right.
That's why it didn't feel like the third highest payroll because so much of that payroll was dead money.
It was gone.
Or guys on the injured list.
Yeah, guys injured or guys... Yeah, guys that were... Right. Injured. I mean, I was thinking more about Abreu and Montero who weren't even on the team by September. But you're right. Like, they're paying a lot of guys to rehab Tommy John surgeries, you know?
I'm looking at the 2030 salary, the payrolls in 2030. The Mets are the second highest payroll.
What is it?
In 2030 at $105 million. They're spending what the Astros were spending on their team in 2013. That's how much they've got allocated for 2030.
Right.
The Padres are the highest right now.
Yeah, they've got some long-term deals on that.
They've got some long, big-money deals,
Xander Bogaerts, Fernando Tatis, you know, they've got some guys that are signed to 13-year deals.
Guess what? Do some quick math in your head and guess what the Astros payroll is in 2030.
Zero.
Yes. Yep. They are tied at 23rd for the lowest pass. There's eight teams with $0 committed to 2030.
Who are the other seven? Okay, because there's some context here. Long term, who are the Astros operating like?
The Marlins.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Reds.
Yep. Small market.
The Orioles, the notorious spendthrift.
Whose GM is Mike Elias, who is a Jeff Luno guy. You know, he was in the building here. So keep going.
The A's, the White Sox.
Okay.
The Cardinals. Yep. And
Cardinals,
the
okay.
Cubs.
Okay. Yeah. And the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, that's the Cubs mildly surprising just because that is a team. That is the haves and the have-nots, that is a have. The Cubs, they've got a good TV deal and they've got a ballpark that sells out, even if the team sucks.
When you look at the teams that have a lot committed to 2030, like teams that have like a lot of either big money contracts.
Who are the top five?
The Padres, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Phillies, and the Red Sox.
There you go. There you go. And that, you know, it's funny you bring up the Red Sox, and we're going to shift over to football here in just a second, but you bring up the Red Sox. Red Sox traded for Garrett Crochet yesterday. So this Garrett Crochet deal finally came through. The deal that we'd all been waiting for at the trade deadline for somebody, the White Sox finally traded Garrett Crochet, really good starting pitcher, to the Red Sox. That was we're starting to get into, for me, Seth, at least, and I'm curious if you feel the same way, we're starting to get into a world where I see the Yankees signing Max Fried, the Red Sox making trades for Garrett Crochet. And these are not new moves, like stylistically not new. It's not new for the Yankees to splurge on a pitcher. You know, Garrett Cole, splurge on a pitcher. It's not new for the Red Sox to trade a bunch of prospects for a guy who they're probably going to have to pay millions and millions and millions of dollars to. For the last 5 or 6 years, really before this offseason, maybe into last season, I never really paid much attention to it because the Astros were operating above the fray. I'm like, all right, do what you want to, Yankees. Do what you want to, Red Sox. It ain't working. We're beating you in the postseason every year. You can put us in ink for the ALCS. This is the first offseason where I've started to feel not like a have-not, but because to your point, Jim Crane still spends money. Not as much as those teams, but he still spends money. The Astros will never be the Marlins. You know what I mean? They'll never be the Marlins. Unless they do a total teardown again, and then they'll become the Astros again. But this is the first offseason where teams like the Red Sox and Yankees and other teams around the American League, around baseball, are making moves, and I'm like, oh, we're behind these guys right now. Or we're kind of in that, in the case of the Red Sox, we're in that same swamp with them right now. We're not above the fray anymore. Where their moves don't really matter to me, you know?
And I think, you know, if Luno were still the GM, like, let's say hypothetically Luno was the GM, right, this whole way through, they had the same level of success, all the ALCS appearances, all of that.
Yep.
I think it would be easier to feel like, okay, well, the Astros have proven that they can compete through things other than just money whipping people, and that building a pipeline, if that's what they choose to do, then they're capable of doing it.
Yeah.
With Dana Brown, I think it's more of a leap of faith.
Yes.
And we've seen some of his thoughts and decisions about younger players have totally worked out, but it's still a leap of faith, and that's where it gets but I think that his track record as a personnel evaluator is very, very solid. When it comes to building a pipeline, I trust that they're going to be good in that regard. And then the other part is that the pitching car wash, their ability to bring up young pitchers or to bring in veterans like Kikuchi, it's still there.
Yeah.
Like, so they still have an edge there.
Yep.
The league has caught up to a lot of the edges and advantages that the Astros initially had, but they are still edges in a lot of regards.
Yep.
It might not be as vast a difference, but it's still there.
Y'all take it easy. This is a text message. You need to take it easy on Tucker. He did catch the last out to win the World Series. Okay, if Tucker leaves...
What was I bashing him?
No. Y'all need... I think it's a sarcastic text, but I have an actual fan emotion angle off of that text. If he goes to the Yankees, Kyle Tucker, does it sully the highlight of him catching the final out of the World Series in 2022? Like, does it, it's like, I miss Kyle Tucker.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And he's had big moments. The whole thing about Tucker in the playoffs, or anybody, I say this about Tucker and Framber, they still, whether they're slumping or not, they inject stress into the opposing team.
Yeah.
It's not like when Framber is on one of his rare slumps that all of a sudden everybody starts playing up in the infield or something. Like, right. They put stress on the pitcher. The pitchers aren't going to change their strategies just because, oh, Kyle Tucker's been 0 for his last 11 or something.
Yep.
So there is that presence at the plate that still has an effect on your lineup. But I'm saying, when I wasn't even bashing Tucker, I was saying the way that people are going to start to frame this if Tucker leaves is like, he was garbage in the playoffs anyway. Yeah. Screw him.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what fans do. And I'm a fan.
And myself. Yeah. No, I'll totally do it.
Yeah.
I'll have cherry-picked so many stats about why it's no big deal to lose Kyle Tucker.
For sure.
I know me.
Yep.
I know my weakness.
Yes.
I'm frail.
Yep. Let's get to circle back to the Texans. We've kind of petered out on the whole Aziz Alshire hit and opinions on it, except one opinion I am curious, and I've not listened to this audio yet. So, Seth, you sent this to Ben. Tua Tagovailoa, who I think is probably the most synonymous NFL player with concussions right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair to say. Here was Tua Tagovailoa in his media availability yesterday on the Aziz Alshire hit on Trevor Lawrence.
I went and looked at the play. That was crazy. I thought that was crazy. He was giving himself up, and, you know, defensive guy came and smoked him. I don't know the reaction time with being a defender, trying to go and make a play on a guy. So, like, I don't know all the logistics with that, but I felt like he did have time to sort of, even if he was going to launch, he could have launched out of the way knowing that Trevor was giving himself up.
This thing is just, this is like politics, man. Like, this thing is so divided along party lines. Quarterbacks, hey, man, you know, he had time. And then every defensive player's like, it's bang, bang, you know?
By the way, that wasn't from yesterday. I think it was from last week's press conference.
Oh, okay,
I got that from on X. There's a woman at Sideline Sarah.
Okay.
She takes press conferences from Texans opponents and stuff and puts them up.
That's
so she put that up 4 days ago, so I'm guessing it was last week's press conference.
Either way,
she was just kind of watching. Yeah.
Either way, that was Tua's
take. Well, I guess it would be different if he said that on this week facing the facing the Texans versus last week when he was kind of being asked about it generally.
Yeah.
So he couched it a little bit more in a second go-round where he's kind of like, yeah, I can see from the defensive side of it. Like, I don't know. Sounds like he's an Aziz hater. Sounds like he's happy to not have Aziz Alshire out there.
I would be if I were him. I'd be thrilled that Zero's not out on the field.
I mean, there were a lot of people that wondered if the NFL, you know, kind of thought, oh boy, these next three games, we've got some marquee guys coming up here. How about we just go ahead and protect these quarterbacks from Aziz Alshire?
Yeah.
And I'm here for your conspiracy theories. I'll even endorse it. Yep, that's exactly what happened.
Hey, man, part of me is like, okay, we got a guy that's that big a problem for the league that he's got to get suspended for three games just to keep everybody safe.
Yeah.
That's the bad
I guess
swarm.
However good that might make you feel.
Yeah.
I it feel sucks not having Aziz Alshire actually.
You know, I'd rather not be
field.
Suspended for sure. I'm just trying.
I do think, okay, just listening to D'Amico during his coach's show with John and Mark, this will not be the last Aziz Alshire. Like, there's going to be moments and incidents just because these are the kinds of plays that D'Amico, he wants guys who play like Aziz Alshire and play like Jalen Petrie. That means that you're going to have some borderline questionable plays, and every now and then you're going to step over the line.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, get used to it. I don't think Aziz Alshire is a dirty player, but I think he plays with a level of passion and ferocity that maybe isn't suited to today's game in a lot of people's minds.
Do we need
but
to
that's
get,
who D'Amico wants.
Do we? No, it's totally true. That's the type of player he's looking for. Do we need to get used to, like, do we need to budget for four games worth of suspensions every year with Aziz Alshire? Is that what you're saying? Like, do we need to brace ourselves for the league coming down on him more?
No, I think just the Texans. Not Aziz Alshire, the Texans themselves.
Oh,
the
defense.
I'm saying even when Aziz Alshire is gone.
I got you.
Did I screw up there? You looked very confused.
No. When you said that we need to brace ourselves for another Aziz Alshire, I thought you were going to say like another Aziz Alshire suspension or something.
No. Just like Aziz Alshire as the paradigm for the kind of player that you want.
I got you.
I want guys that are kind of line steppers.
Yeah.
I want guys that are playing right up to the edge of legality.
Yes.
And every now and then, when you're playing up to the edge of legality, you step over a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to give equal time. We gave a quarterback time on Aziz Alshire. And you know what? I missed Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney opined on the Aziz Alshire. If it were anybody else other than Clowney, I would say, we're done
Clowney,
with
whose most famous hit probably would be illegal today. I don't even know. It was probably helmet to helmet or
dude,
something.
Dude, that is a great. Well, the helmet came rolling off. Looked like the dude's head came rolling off.
Which we know, if the helmet comes off, it doesn't matter if there's actual helmet to helmet contact or not.
Right.
You get flagged and fined for
No doubt. Yeah.
You could hit him in his belly button, and they're like, oh, clearly helmet to helmet contact. There's no place for that in today's football game.
That hit was in 2012. As I'm listening to Clowney, we'll play Clowney here in 2 seconds, but as I'm listening and watching this video of Clowney yesterday, I'm like, Clowney is in year 11. Felt like they drafted him like 2 years ago, the Texans. But anyways, here was Clowney on the hit.
They don't look out for the defensive players. They don't look out for offensive players. You see that around me. They let us get cut. They let the big man come around the edge, run up on a little of those people on defense, the little cornerbacks where you can't cut no more. The game is made up for the offensive score points, and we know that. But as a defensive player, you ain't trying to go out there and hurt yourself also, so you play at a full-speed game. It's a full-speed game. So when he run around the corner, and you're not out there, so you really won't understand what I'm about to, like, how I go. We play at full speed. We're not trying to hurt ourselves. We're definitely not trying to hurt him, but we're trying to win a game. So he playing at a full-speed pace. To me, it was a bang-bang play. I don't think he was trying to hurt him. But Trevor, he's 6'6", sliding. And then if he got his legs down, his upper half is like kind of up, man. He's a big guy sliding, but like I said, I think he's just playing at a fast pace. I'd have been there in that situation before, so I kind of understand where he's coming from. It's just something you don't want to happen. I hope Trevor okay. And, you know, I think he's a great player that got that hit, so I just hope he can come back all right, too.
All right, so he was nice there at the end. I love the part where he goes like, man, the dude's 6'6".
It's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's what all these quarterbacks have said about when you slide. Your head is the last thing remaining.
Yep.
And if a guy tries to, because we've seen this so many times, that's why it was driving me insane when people were acting like Aziz was trying to hit Trevor Lawrence in the head, even though he didn't hit him in the head. If he tried to take his forearm out of it and tried to just, if at that last moment he realized, oh, crap, and he tried to sail over him. We see this all the time. you end up hitting the guy, and you hit him in the head, and then all of a, so I don't. Once he committed to the hit, he did about as best as he could as far as making a clean illegal hit.
Yeah.
Is that he just he tried not to hit him in the head. If he tried to sail over him, he would have hit him in the head.
Yep. Did you see the Joe Burrow story about his house getting broken into while they were playing Monday Night Football this week?
Only from the I've seen mention of it. I didn't dig into it at all.
Yeah, the big story from that was the big story from that one was the person quote watching the house. Yeah. And I don't recall her name. I'll look it up. I'm sure you guys will text in. But she's an SI swimsuit model, and she was the one that called 911. Olivia Ponton. She was the one that called 911 because she walked into Burrow's house and there was a bedroom window broken, and the bedroom and other
parts
of the house
claims at least
were ransacked. Yeah,
yeah.
But she was listed in the police report as an employee of Joe Burrow. She's employed by Joe Burrow.
She's employed by Joe Burrow, yeah. the SI swimsuit model who happened to be
watching
at
his house
and watching
right,
everything.
Right,
okay.
Right. Yeah.
All right. A, do we think that she actually is not involved with the incident?
Well, I think she does work for Joe Burrow, but I don't know that I would list it as employee type of work, you know?
Like, I don't know. I think I always assume when a professional... Was it during the game? It was during the game. Yeah, you know, this happened to Mahomes and Kelsey a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And whenever it happens to professional athletes, I always feel like it's probably an inside job to some. Now, people do know where these guys live and everything, and obviously they know when they're not available and everything.
Yeah.
But I think most burglars also assume that these guys have pretty good security systems. And I think when it almost always sounds too easy.
Yep.
Like, all right, wait a second. So I feel like it's probably an inside job. I'm guessing the SI model doesn't have anything to do with it, but you never know. She's a person of interest, in my opinion.
She, in your opinion, right? Now, it doesn't sound like she is in the opinion of the Cincinnati police.
Well, because they're idiots. They got duped by her. She batted her eyelashes at them. And like, okay. Sorry, ma'am.
I love how you're
pinning. Can you sign this?
Can you sign this, please? I love how you have Olivia Ponton's picture on the wall of the police office right now, along with like a few other suspects.
I don't though, because they got bamboozled
by her
flirtatiousness.
But in your police office, her picture would be right up there.
Because I run a clean operation. We're professionals. Damn it, we go by the book.
Right, right, right.
All right.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
yeah.
I got all these Cincinnati clowns going around messing up the crime scene because they're trying to get autographs and pictures with the model instead of investigating and sequestering and sealing everything off, man.
No, that's fair. That's fair. You're very passionate.
This is how John Ramsey ended up under scrutiny for so many years. Sloppy work at the beginning.
Tua was asked about this at his availability, and this was yesterday, so I've got the chronology on this one correct, about the Joe Burrow break-in, because there are some rumors out there, Seth, that these are all connected, that there's this sort of this group out there that's not just a Kansas City thing, that they're targeting athletes.
Yeah.
That they might be, you know, that
it might be the same group.
It might be the same group. There's talk of that out there.
That's badass. I bet they work for a security
company. A 30 for 30 right there, man.
Well, usually the armed robbery, it seems like every documentary I watch about an armored car robbery, it's most of them have an inside element to it.
Yes.
It's the people that know the routes, know who the slack ass is back at the home office, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
So they either work for a security company or something, or maybe they work for Ring.
Ooh, the doorbell company. Oh, yeah. Man, that would be something. Here was Tua. Tua's not super nervous about it because he's got muscle.
I have personal security just because my house had gotten broken into, not necessarily my house, but one of my cars. And so it's a little too close for my comfort with my family being in the house. So we got personal security to take care of all of that. When we're on the road, we got someone with my wife, got, you know, someone also at the house, surveying the house. So just to let that be known, they are armed. So I hope if you decide to go to my house, you think twice.
All right.
He just flat out, he might have pulled up one of those gun owner signs.
He just opened up his jacket to show off his gat.
The sign they show people on there on their house where there's a gun owner and they've got a picture of the gun and everything.
He basically just went like and flashed his gat to everybody. Like,
he showed what he was holding.
Don't step to me, all right? The funniest
what
part.
What if he just tapped his waistband? Yeah, I like that.
The funniest part of that cut. Ben, play the very big. Ben knows the part because I saw Ben double over.
I have personal security, just because my house had gotten broken into. Not necessarily my house, but one of my cars.
Okay, and stop right there. Yeah, there's
not
a big.
Not necessarily my house.
Did Tua, before he signed his first contract, did he live in his car? That's what I want to know. Did he did he get his car and his house confused at that point?
This sounds like a politician that claims that they were flew into a war zone or something. We're like, wait a second. You were in Topeka that weekend.
Right. Like, one of my houses got broken into. Well, not exactly my house, but my car.
That was a beach house down the... Ben, play Jags Lady. That's what he did.
He did.
In Miami.
In Miami.
I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
This is my car. Actually my car.
Well, that might actually be
I was
true.
Living in my car in Miami.
Okay, that one, Jags Lady, that may or may not.
Yeah.
That's okay, so that's the thing in Miami is you lie about your about house-related topics.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. If his security detail is like 250-pound Polynesian dudes,
yeah,
it's worked on me. I know. That dude up. Nope.
Dude, that is muscle. Yes, yeah. That is muscle. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you.
That 350-pound Polynesian guy, it's like, man, I would love to have dinner at his house, but I do not want to make him angry.
No.
It's just like,
whatever
boy,
it is.
Boy, that is just a gentle giant. Ow!
Yeah.
Ow!
Right. Ow! Whatever he feeds us is going to taste amazing. Trust me.
Yeah.
We will tell him it tastes amazing. Okay, so Payne and Pendergast, we had a few people text in after we talked about the Rockets in headlines. Hey, guys, did you see Steve Kerr's press conference? Anytime we can get Steve Kerr complaining about the officials, we play it on the show. Steve Kerr's tears are coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I feel like I'm back at Acrisure Field in Pittsburgh. Renegade. That was kind of fun when they played Renegade at the beginning of the fourth quarter, Seth. I'm not going to lie. The Steeler game?
Yeah.
That was badass. That was really
I'd cool. never heard it before.
Yeah.
But, what's the Renegade one?
This Renegade. They play Renegade by Sticks at the beginning of the fourth quarter at Steeler games. And everybody waves their terrible towels, and it's.
There's one thing I've realized I'm generally unaware of is you've done this a few times where you've brought up like, oh yeah, they play that song at this stadium,
yeah,
and it'll be at stadiums where I've played like many times. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess
that's good. Yeah, it is. Means you're focused. Yeah,
focused.
Yeah,
dialed in.
Yeah,
unaware of my surroundings.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Lost in the tunnel beneath the stadium.
That might be a new truth. That might be a new tradition. I'm not totally sure. I just know it was a thing. People are like, oh, everybody around us, like, because they only play it, apparently, they only play it if the game is still kind of within reach. Like, if it's a blowout, they don't do Renegade for some reason,
it's a rallying call.
Yeah, yeah, at the beginning of the, and you never know. It's always in the second half, but you never know when they're going to start playing it. You know, Renegade starts with that slow build, like, oh, mama, kingdom.
Oh, that's Renegade.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And then it builds to a crescendo, and then, bam, the music Ben was just playing hits. Yeah.
I went to a Styx concert.
I like Styx.
Yeah, my sophomore year in high school, I think. At Darien Lake.
I think they're still out there on the nostalgia circuit right now.
It was, yeah. And I don't think it's any of the original members or what. I don't know. Who knows what it is?
Who knows? But yeah.
Who, you just want to bring back memories of your junior high dance where
you kidding me? Styx? Hell yeah.
Your butt poked out backwards to disguise your shame. And all that.
Yes, you're holding, grabbing her at arm's length on her shoulders to slow dance with her. Yes,
your butt stuck out because yeah. No, we didn't have to. We didn't have. We got away with a lot of our junior high dances. Thinking back on it now, I don't want to think too long about it because that's kind of creepy. Okay,
yeah.
But yeah. I think our junior high dance monitors were out smoking weed in the back.
Oh, for sure. They were smoking, for sure. Yeah.
It was all,
if it was just a cigarette. Steve Kerr was upset last night after the Rockets beat the Warriors 91-90. If you missed it, the Rockets were down by 6 with a little over a minute to go in this game, and they had a nice comeback. Fred VanVleet hits a 3. Draymond turns the ball over. With 27 seconds left in the game, Şengün gets a bucket, so now it's a 1-point game. Steph Curry misses a step back three with 11 seconds. I'm kind of giving you the play-by-play here because they climbed back in this thing doing what are very 2024 Rocket-like things. It was really cool to see.
One of the top defenses in the league of things.
Yeah, the finals.
In a game that was really scrappy. Really physical.
Yep.
And that's reflected in the score.
Yes, and reflected in Steve Kerr's comments because ultimately the play that provided the winning points for the Rockets was what I will admit is a very marginal foul call on Jonathan Kuminga when he landed on Jalen Green, both of whom were diving for a ball on the floor after Steph Curry missed his three-point shot. And scrambling, and the ref calls a foul in what had been a very physical game. Steve Kerr, not happy.
Ball situation, 80 feet from the basket with the game on the line. I've never seen that. I think I saw it in college one time, 30 years ago. Never seen it in the NBA. unconscionable. I don't even understand what just happened. You know, loose ball, diving on the floor, 80 feet from the basket, and you're going to give a guy two free throws to decide the game when people are scrambling for the ball. Just give them a timeout. Give them a timeout and let the players decide the game. That's how you officiate, especially because the game was a complete wrestling match. You know, they didn't call anything. Steph Curry got hit on the elbow, plain as day, on a jump shot, just clubbed right on there, no call. So you've established you're just not going to call anything throughout the game. It's a physical game. We're going to call a loose ball foul on a jump ball situation with guys diving on the floor with the game on the line? This is a billion-dollar industry. You got people's jobs on the line.
Oh, it's a billion-dollar industry. They built us a new stadium.
Last I checked, Rockets win. Scoreboard, 91-90.
This is, you know I'm going to credit for this, Sean? One, Aziz Alshire. You know what they cited? You know what they cited in the report? Forearm to the head and neck area. That was the difference. It was the head and neck area.
Yeah.
Of an unprotected Jalen Green.
Jalen Green.
Yep. An unprotected. Yeah. So I think that they watched these NBA officials have been watching. They watch the NFL too. They've been watching all the shouty shows talk about all this and how dirty a player Aziz Alshire must be and all that.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, Kuminga. He's just another Aziz Alshire. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put an end to this right now.
Right.
Thank you, Aziz. Thank you.
That'd be funny if they suspended Jonathan Kuminga for 3 games for his foul on Jalen Green.
Cite the precedent
contact
of the NFL.
Of the NFL, yeah.
There was no melee afterwards, so they'd reduce it to 2.
Yeah, right. I don't know, man. I just love listening to Steve Kerr be sad about things. Look, he went on for another minute after that. We could have played the whole thing. He went on for another minute babbling about this foul. Look, the foul was marginal. I didn't think all the points he made were terrible. When you start to get to the billion-dollar industry thing, like this is the first bad call that's ever happened in NBA history. Like the whole, the castle is going to come crumbling to the ground because you got this. You have three blind mice out there calling a bad foul at the end of a game in December. But granted, an NBA Cup game.
This is like when Kodak decided not to utilize their digital technology. Billions of dollars turned to dust.
Crumbling to the ground. Yeah. Save that part of it, the billion-dollar industry thing.
Did you know that, by the way? Kodak had the digital. They invented the first digital camera, and they sat on the technology.
Oh, dude, I have no dog in the fight in any of that. My stomach hurts when I hear stuff like that.
Yeah. And I grew up, you know, Kodak is from Rochester. That's a big, you know, that's a big point of pride for the city.
Well,
this is Kodak, world leader in photography and everything, and now gone.
And probably a big part of the economic base there as well, I would imagine.
But they did, and then you find out that, like, wait a second, you guys were sitting on this technology?
What's the
And you just thought, nah.
Yeah. Has there ever been a book written or quotes about why they just didn't decide to do anything with it?
Yeah, there's lots of articles.
Are there? Okay.
I think it was one of those things they're like, hey, we know we're good at what we're good at, and we're not going to stray from it. We're good at the film stuff.
Right.
And I think they
thought that, okay, well, we've got this technology, so nobody else can use it or develop it, but you know how that goes.
Like you're sitting on a bomb or something like that.
Yeah. Surely we'll be the only country that ever has the nuclear bomb.
Right, yeah. I'm glad they weren't running our country.
Nothing but smooth sailing henceforth.
Yes. Oh, my God, that's funny. The Rockets, the Rockets win last night. That was what regular season games, and I know the NBA Cup is what it is. That was a big one. That to get off the schneid against the Warriors. Rockets were favored going into that game too. I like seeing that last night before the game. I'm like, dang, the Rockets are favored by 1.5 against the Warriors. They didn't cover. That's what I should get mad about today. You didn't cover the 1.5-point spread, Rockets. You only won 91-90. Jerks.
What the hell? When are you guys gonna start caring about the fans?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you're playing a brand of basketball that you can feel proud of as a fan and all that, but right. I got to pay for Christmas, damn it.
Yeah. Where do you come out on this? No one's talking about this. How bad of a trade that Dana Brown made with Kikuchi. Gave up 3 of our prospects for a rental, and they didn't even try to re-sign him. The Kikuchi trade is fine. I think this is someone responding to you and I. Obviously, you and I talking about the Astros earlier, where I think we were... I think you and I are both positive on Dana Brown, right? I think Dana Brown's done a good job so far.
No, the Kikuchi trade, that was I can't continually vacillate on that thing on into perpetuity. At first, I was very, very skeptical. And then, lo and behold, the car wash worked. And Kikuchi worked out. Kikuchi wasn't the reason you didn't advance in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, It was a gutsy move, but I don't think it's tied to whether or not he can evaluate prospects or anything, which is everything moving forward.
Dude.
Now, Will Wagner went and batted 305 for Toronto, which is I'm guessing what that guy.
He was one of the
also.
Prospects that went in the trade, and the same text was like, you could just plug in Will Wagner at third for Bregman. Like, okay, settle down. Like, it's a very small sample. So we love Will Wagner. He's a legacy, son of Billy Wagner, but.
And that's why he ended up in Toronto.
Yeah.
That's like half their players are guys with some kind of lineage.
Yeah. Well, some of them have moved on, but yeah, like Gurriel. Well,
I mean, over the times, they're notable. Yeah. Like over the last 5-6 years, anytime you watch the Blue Jays, they've got a couple of either sons of or brothers of other very notable MLB players.
Yeah, Bichette and Biggio. And yeah, no, that's kind of how it's been up there. This is what I would say about the Kikuchi trade and Dana Brown. And this is relevant. I know the trade is what it is. It's in the rear view. But it's relevant because the Astros are in all likelihood about to make at least one, if not more, trades. Because I think if you're going to trade Tucker, I think you have to have serious conversations about Framber as well. You know, what could he bring back? You know, he may be able to bring back a haul even bigger than Kyle Tucker because ultimately his next contract isn't as expensive and he's an ace that you can plug in. And in the postseason, Framber Valdez is a way more valuable player than Kyle Tucker is. Okay.
Oh, I mean, Framber, he's got the exact same ERA as Garrett Cole over the last five years.
He's a really good pitcher. This is what I would say about the Kikuchi trade, though, in terms of framing it about Dana Brown. If anything, it should make you feel better about Dana Brown because the evaluation of all the players involved in that, it's not Dana Brown's fault the Astros got swept by the Tigers and didn't move on in the playoffs. It's not.
Yeah.
If you're just looking at the evaluation of that trade, you know, yeah, Will Wagner had a good couple months. We don't know what Joey Loperfido is. And then they traded the Blas kid as well. Am I getting his name right? The pitcher that threw like
Blas.
One or two. Blas.
You said Blas.
Blas, yeah. So that, like, there's nothing saying that any of those three guys are going to turn into anything. None of them have so far. Wagner had a couple good months there. Kikuchi went 9-0 for you here.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it was purely the evaluation
of those four guys, you won the deal.
I've already said that, look, if what your decision was you're going to go for it, like, once they make, I think that the issue that people have with the Kikuchi trade, and it's very understandable, is you're really not criticizing the trade itself. You're like the actual trade value and everything. Mm-hmm. What you're actually criticizing is the aggressiveness in a year that didn't yield postseason success.
Where you're a marginal team, you know?
Yeah, like, okay, so that's what you're upset about. A lot of you, some of you otherwise, but, and that's my same token is like at the time I said, all right, look, I'm not going to hindsight this. I'm going to say, all right, if it works out and Kikuchi goes through the car wash and he does really well, then, okay, yeah, that was a good trade on the sum total of it. It just didn't work out for the team success. But I thought how Dana Brown was able to get a World Series caliber pitcher into the fold by giving up some prospects. I thought that was a completely legitimate trade.
If anything, it should make you feel better about Dana Brown and his ability to evaluate. All right, D'Amico Ryans was asked yesterday about the one thing that makes Nico Collins special. He backed up a comp that we had on this show. He's also asked about the chances for one of his players winning some hardware this year. We will have that for you coming up next.